All right, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Luke V.
Woo-hoo! Is this thing on? It is on? It's on, okay. My name's Luke, and I'm an alcoholic. And I need a drink. Let's start out with that, man. Let's get right after it. It's good to see you all tonight, and happy birthday to the birthday people, Arlene, Dank, and welcome to anybody who's new or didn't admit they were new, and you know, hopefully you guys can find something that I found here, which is a life beyond my wildest drunken dreams, right? This is a program that I thought would never work. I thought I would never actually be able to be sober or to get sober or stay sober and clean. You know, I'm an ANDA. I got outside issues. And actually, you know, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous through our sister or another program called NA. And I came in through the side door with about 6 months, you know, clean. And because I always had this reservation with alcohol, I couldn't see that the DUIs, I couldn't see that the falling asleep and passing out on the way to the toilet naked in my hallway, I couldn't see the pissing of my pants, I couldn't see that shit as a problem. I just thought, you know, I had a problem with drugs. And when I got here, I admit this. God, I got to take this back even before that a little bit. You know, my family was an immigrant family, all right? I immigrated from Holland when I was 3 years old. So we felt different. I felt different. Had to go through that whole thing of the languages and the fitting in and all that stuff. And so it was always a little different. But you know, we wound up here in Santa Maria. My dad started his own business, and we grew up in a neighborhood. First, we lived over on Western and Northwest Side, and we lived over there for a while, and then we moved over to by Fessler Street. And in that neighborhood, it just happened that there was a whole bunch of young families with young kids. And so, you know, I got two older brothers, and we fit in, and you know, grew up there until I was in fifth grade, and then we moved out to Orchid. And well, back in 1968, nobody lived in Orchid except for the people in Orchid. Right? And it was a small community. And so anyway, we were way out there. And so, you know, all the friendships I'd made and you know, the networking that, you know, our family had done and all that stuff, you know, all of a sudden changed. I'm in fifth grade. I'm living out there. I got nobody to play with. We're living out in the sticks, you know. And so, you know, it was me and my two older brothers, and, you know, they were older. I was the youngest. So usually I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't do anything. So it was hard to reconnect with what I had. And so that longing of wanting to fit in, I remember in fifth grade, I remember I would ride my bike from Fox and Woods all the way downtown to Fessler Street just to go and play with my friends. I remember sitting on the school playground out at May Grisham. It was May Grisham, it's OA now. And that used to be an elementary school. And I remember, you know, when I lived downtown, you know, we all played ball and we all met at Fessler and everybody was hanging out all the time after school, right? Well, you know, I'm here fifth grade and I'm out there and I'm shooting baskets. Nobody's around, nobody to play with, nobody to do anything. And I remember, this was probably about 3:30, so it's after school. And, you know, I'm walking back to the playground and I'm sitting on this basketball and, you know, I remember I was just like crying and, you know, because I was so lonely. And I remember the teacher came up to me, you know, Mrs. Ottenbright. I'll never forget this lady for this. And she came up to me and she put her hand on me and she just told me, you just got to ask God to come into your heart. It was my first experience with somebody trying to, you know, get me to see something that I didn't understand. We weren't churchy people. We weren't any of that. But it was kind of like my first spiritual experience that I didn't realize what it was until I got sober. You know what I mean? When I did my inventories and start taking a look at my life for what I'd been through and what had gone on. And so anyway, you know, we did that, and then I had two old brothers, like I was saying, and we were all really good athletes, and we were in the paper all the time, and we played at Hancock, and we played at Cal Poly, and we did all those kind of things, and, you know, we were known for it, and it was like, but, you know, I went to Hancock, and I played there my freshman year, and, you know, I blew out my knee, and it was like, okay, you know, so I just... I was already doing what I was doing. I was a teen dope dealer, right? You know? And, you know, it wasn't a good scene for me, you know? Because I had already, like, when I was 17 years old and I was still in high school, I remember me and my buddies, we'd go down to Santa Barbara and we'd go and buy pounds of weed and bricks of hash and buy some cocaine and bring it back to Santa Maria. Now, this was in 1977, 1976. Well, you get caught with that shit, you're in jail for a long time. You know, and I kept doing that. And I did that until I really got clean. I was always around people that were using and using and dealing and using. And so anyway, you know, I was always trying to fit in. I was always trying to do stuff. But, you know, I started to let my life grow out of control when I was a senior in high school. You know, I broke my ankle playing basketball, right? It's all basketball shit. And broke my ankle playing basketball, and the coaches thought I was faking, so they were taping me up, and they were just putting me back on the court. And I was playing, and I played two games on a broken foot. And I remember I went to the orthopedic, and he said, "What have you been doing, you know?" And I said, "I've been playing, man. They just been taping me up." And he goes, "You got a broken foot, and then you got to, you know, so you're in a cast. You can't play anymore." So that just opened that gate even more, right? To where now it's like I was getting loaded before school. I remember my calculus teacher came up to me and he says, "This is this semester. I turned 18, my middle of my senior year." And I remember he came up to me and he says, "You got to drop out of calculus. I'll pass you with a C, but you got to drop out because, you know, I'm not showing up to class. I'm stoned in class. You know, I'm failing the class, but I was an athlete." So he was just pushing me through, right? Right? And that's the kind of the way it was. And, you know, and then so anyway, I go on and I live my life. And, you know, I worked for different companies. I got out of school, you know, after getting hurt. I played at Hancock. I blew out a knee. I got hurt. I got out of school. I went and I worked odd jobs. And then I went and worked for my dad for a couple of years. And then I decided to go back to school and asked if I could go back to school. And so I went down to Orange County and went to school. Well, I did really well when I went to school because I was more focused. I knew what I wanted to do, and I already had 2 years of practical experience in doing what I did. So I went down to learn theory, and I learned theory. So that was cool. Thing about it is no matter what was going on, the partying was always there, right? I mean, it was like I got through school and I made it through school, but man, that last semester, that last quarter was really hard. You know, I needed to finish one project, man. And I just could barely finish it. I turned it in and it was like, I didn't care. And instead of being first in my class, I was second in my class. You know, because I just didn't care, excuse me. And I didn't care anymore. I was ready to get out and start making money because I needed to be doing what I would like to be doing, which is, you know, thinking I'm a cool guy, getting out there making money, trying to chase the honeys and the monies and doing all that stuff, trying to be somebody, right? And, you know, I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous because for the first time in my life, it's given me kind of like a tool and a roadmap and something to look at that gives me direction in how to live my life and to look at myself in ways that I never could before. You know, I never could see the most obvious things that everybody else could see in me. You know, my parents, I remember my dad, he came up to me and goes, "You're nothing but a no good drunk fucking drug addict loser." You know, and I go, "Well, I'll show you." You know, my parents, my brothers had to pull me out of the house because we almost went at it. And, you know, and that's the way it was. It was, I could never see my part in anything, right? It was always about, well, you got hurt, you know, or you did this, but you never saw what you were doing before you got hurt. You never saw what you were doing, you know, any other time. All you ever looked at is how you were mistreated or misbehaved or unloved or, you know. And that's a crock of shit. It really doesn't matter anymore. Because they did the best they could. They had to deal with me. My selfishness and self-centeredness. You know, the only person that thought I was having a bad life was me. Right? I had a good life. My parents had a successful business. We lived in beautiful homes. Had every opportunity to do whatever it is that we wanted to do, you know. And I just pissed it all off. You know, I pissed it off. I chased dope. I chased drinking and using. You know, that was my goal. I wanted to be the coolest guy by being the guy that got the most loaded at the party. I remember one time, man, we did this PCP, and I know it's Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, this is my story, and you got to hear it. So if you want to hear it, fine. If you think it's out of line, you can leave. I don't care. It's my story. I am an alcoholic. But I remember, man, we did this PCP or this cannabinol, and we walked in. I remember I did it. We did it down here at the mall, and I went out to this party at my friend's house. She was having a party, me and my friend Rick. And Rick and I walk into, I remember we get there, and I get out of the car, I'm driving, I can't feel my legs. I can't see my legs. And I remember we get out, and I'm just walking like a zombie. I remember we walked into the party all the way to the back of the bathroom, we turned around and walked out and said, "Let's get out of here." You know what I mean? And that's kind of the way the whole life went for a long time. You know, and that's just one of a million. You know, and you don't think at the time, you know, or, you know, driving on PCP, driving down Highway 1, going out to Guad Beach at, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and wondering how you got there and how you didn't, but all you could hear was this whoosh, whoosh, cars going by you, you know, and that's part of my story, you know. I'm more of a dope fiend than I am an alcoholic. I say that because that shows you how much denial there is about alcohol and alcoholism, right? It's still the one that I have the greatest denial with. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I need to deal with my denial, regardless of the amount of time we get. I mean, I'm still sick. I mean, I come here because I still ain't all there. You know, thank God this is a living program, and we get to continue on to be able to live this life, and we get to seek a loving God that we find here. You know, when I got here, and I got here this, I tell you, you know, when I got here this last time, I got here, well, let me tell you, my sobriety date is November 27th of 1994. I got 31 years clean, right, and sober, right? But when I got here, the first time I got here in 1986, March 26th of 86, right? So I would almost have 40 years, right? But I'm not supposed to have 40 years, right? Because I couldn't accept my alcoholism. Alcohol took me out. Alcohol will take me out again. Alcohol will take me back to what I was doing before I got here. The last 5 years of my using and drinking, I pulled a Geographic because I got kicked out of my family business. I was president of the company. I got kicked out of the family business. Nobody wanted me around. It was like I was excommunicated from my family. Nobody wanted to talk to me. No one wanted to see me. And it was like, well, F you, right? And so, you know, I pulled a Geographic to Northern California, and I lived in Santa Rosa for 5 years. And the first couple, 2.5 years, you know, I get another DUI up there, you know, I have to do a couple weekend stays, that kind of thing. You know, nothing serious. Never got popped, really, for any dope or doing anything like that. But, you know, either I was doing a lot of cocaine or I was doing a lot of methamphetamine, but I was drinking a lot. And I would have those periods when I would be doing one or the other, or I would be doing both, right? But I was never able to stay clean. It was always like trying to manage and control my drinking and using, you know? And so it's very obvious to me that I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, right? I was homeless for the last 2.5 years. I was totally unemployable for the last 2.5 years of my being out there. You know, I'm living on the street. I'm dumpster diving. I'm still dumpster diving at a year sober. You know, people, you don't see me like that anymore because recovery has changed me and changed my life and given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, right? I've been able to meet people. You know, there's been some really influential people in my life that have got me here. Ray J, you know, he let me sleep on his floor for 4 months, and I slept on his floor in his extra bedroom. And then he kicked me out. Sober, he kicked me out because I'm eating all the cereal, and I'm not paying him any rent. He's like, you gotta go. It's like, you know, what Ray did is he taught me. He says, you gotta get a job, you can't get loaded, and you gotta go to meetings. And what he did is he taught me that I needed to become accountable and responsible for my actions and my being. For the first time, somebody, one more time, he called me on my shit and said, hey, you know, you're going to do this or you can live the way you're living. Well, it was November 27th. It's wet outside, you know, and I don't want to be out in the rain. So anyway, I did what he asked me to do. Well, let me tell you what it was like. That first year, I was sketchy as all get out. I didn't know whether I was coming or going. I would sit there and vibrate. I was the guy that had to sit on his hands. I was the guy that said, hey, they said, that guy ain't staying. That guy's not going to be here. Don't mess with him. Well, I meet this woman, right? I meet this woman here in Alcoholics Anonymous, like we meet women here in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? She had 20 years. I had 4 months, right? So it was like, all right. Her name was Pam. Okay, this is my late wife. All right, and I say late wife, not divorced wife. She's my late wife. We were together for 13 years. That woman, God gave me exactly what I needed. She knew how to break, to love me unconditionally when I was broken at every single level, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, monetarily, every single level. And she just loved me, you know. I am forever grateful. I would not be here without that woman. You know, she had 20 years, and I remember, you know, Ray kicked me out, and I go live with Pam. Right? That's what we do. We look for another person to manipulate, you know, who? Somebody else, you know? And so, anyway, she went for it, and and we were together for 13 years, and we got married when I had 2 years sober. You know, we bought a house and we were together for 13 years and she passed away in this program with 33 years sober, right? I had 12 years sober at the time when she passed away. Let me tell you, you want to talk about pain and you want to talk about how addiction's hard and you want to talk about living on the street is hard. You know what's hard? Feeling that shit in recovery and walking through it. It'll kick your ass. I still want to cry because I can identify with that pain and it hurts. And I love that woman so much. You know, you don't know what it is you got until it's gone. And it's the same thing with people, places, or it's with recovery. You know, you work your ass off and then one day, man, you get this fucking brilliant idea of like, I don't think it's going to be that bad this time. My life is really going well. It's going to be okay. I think I can do it one more time. You know what? I'm going to the bridge. I was homeless for 2.5 years, dumpster diving, and I'm going to the bridge next time. That was my moment of clarity coming out of the Hotel 6 over here on Main Street. You know, it was like, either you're going to get sober or you ain't. What are you going to do, Luke? You know, and it was like, okay, I'll see if Ray will put me up. Ray put me up. And that was my start, man. You know, we get here and we just got to keep doing the deal a day at a time and not let our head get the best of us all the time. Because our head is the biggest fucking liar we got. It tells you shit that you ain't got. The disease is there. The I self in me is always there. It does not go away. It gets monitored because we have tools today. We have a roadmap. We have steps to be able to identify the things that go on in our world that allow us to realize, am I going nuts? You know, am I powerless? Is my life becoming unmanageable? Where's God? You know, I had to find a loving God in this program, right? I got to find a loving God. I wasn't a churchy guy, like I said, you know, and I came in here and I remember Daryl, I was struggling with that whole concept, and Daryl said, well, isn't it better to believe that there is a God and find out there isn't one rather than to believe there isn't a God and find out there is? It was like, fuck. Fuck. So I became a little more willing, right? But I'll tell you, when I took my third step, I did that wholeheartedly. Because I'd met Pam, Ray had put me up, my life had changed. I had started to stay sober, and I, you know, 3 days for me when I was out there on the street was like a long, long time. You know, I was 24/7 every day, right? I mean, every day. And, you know, so anyway, you know, I got that into my heart to where it was like this thing with God, you know, okay, did you or didn't you turn your life over to the care of God? And I did, and I did it wholeheartedly, right? Well, let me tell you, now when I'm 12 years sober, 14 years sober, I'm losing my house. I'd lost 30% of my income and my wife had just died, and I got a daughter who's going to Cal State San Francisco, and I'm trying to make all this shit work. Right? Pam's gone. She's already gone. You know, she's gone. And I'm trying to deal with this. Well, you know, I'm still grieving. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm feeling like the world's getting pulled out from underneath me. You know, and I remember Stevie and I, we got together. Stevie is my sponsor. And Stevie and I got together at the picnic table, and he just said to me, he took me back through 1, 2, 3. And he got to the third step and he said, did you or didn't you turn your life over to the care of God? And I said, yes, I did. And I'm filled with anger, resentment. I was homicidal and suicidal. Insanity had totally returned. In recovery with 14 years sober. I was fucking nuts. And he said that to me, and he said, and I said, yes, I did. Yes, I did. And he just said to me, and I say this way because he had to put me in check. He goes, then what are you tripping on, fucker? In other words, get off the cross, Luke. We need the wood. Right? You're not the center of the universe. Shit happens to people. Right? You're just, you know, you're not, you become self-reliant rather than God-reliant. You know, I've taken the mastery of all these steps and incorporated it into me thinking that I got to manage and control everything. I'm about that far from going out and losing my sobriety and getting loaded. I'm right there. You know, time is not the guarantee, people. And I think for people that have seen people with time relapse, time is not the guarantee. You know, this is a living program. We get to sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, right? We continue on. We got to continue to seek what it is we find here. We have an avenue of travel that allows us to walk through these things and to walk through the underlying causes and conditions of why I got loaded. Why did I get loaded? Because I'm selfish and self-centered. I'm filled with resentment. You know, Stevie would tell me, Luke, you're an outright mental defective, right? He goes, we come in here, we read it in the third chapter, every, you know, bodily and mentally differ from our fellows. Look around the room. Look around the room. How many of you think you got it all together? You're sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous. You didn't get here with a success story. Somehow you tore your own life down. You know, we want to be in denial. We want to think we're better than we are. We don't want to let people get to know us. I wouldn't do my fourth and fifth until I had five freaking years, because I had statute limitations and I had fucking, you know, things hanging over my head. And living on the street, you don't trust people. I'm not trusting you. I ain't telling you. And you know what? It was, I remember Daryl and Al came to my house, and Al was, he was my sponsor, and he said to me, he says, Luke, either you're going to grow or you're going to go. What are you going to do? It's like Stevie told me, what are you going to do? You know, I have to be at the end of my rope before I seem to be willing enough to take the next step or to take the next action that's going to allow me to stay here. You know, the pain will freaking motivate you. Either you do it or you won't. It's just like they talk about with this God thing. Either God is or he isn't. Well, I believe God is today. I honestly believe that in my heart. I will go to my grave with that. You know, my first spiritual experience was with that teacher. Now, that's the first one that I recognized as in recovery. But now you also got to, let me run this down past you. When we came to America and integrated to America, the plane that we transferred from, we're supposed to transfer from New York to Los Angeles, that plane went down and everybody died. I'm still here. I've been run over by a car. I've had guns pulled on me. You know, I've been hit in the head with a baseball bat. You know. I died in my backyard 2 years ago. They had to hit me 7 times with the paddles. And I'm still here. You know, God's got a plan, and I don't have to understand it. I don't have to see it, but God damn it, I believe it. I believe it, and I don't know what it is. It's like you say around here, just do the next given thing. Do the next right action. You know, do what it is you're supposed to do. Try not to hurt anybody, you know? What is it, you know? And what does all that stuff tell me? It tells me, get out of you. You know, when I died and I'm in the hospital and I didn't remember this shit, I'm going to tell you a story. You know, I remember, you know, I was in the hospital and I had like Groundhog's Day because I'd been out. And usually you don't get your mind back right away or maybe even at all. Well, fortunately, I've got my mind back, I hope. But I'm in there, and so I had to be, they had to sedate, they had to restrain me and put me down on, because I'm ripping the tubes out, thinking and walking out of the ER, or not the ER, the ICU, thinking I'm fine. So they had to have my wife, Lisa, you know, who I'm married to now, Lisa, she came and she had to spend the night in there with me and stay with me. You know, and so I remember I woke up one morning and it was like, hi, Lee, I know you're here, honey. I love you, but, you know, where's Pam? Where's Pam? Pam's not here. She's gone. And I said, no, I'm just talking to her. I did the same thing with my folks. So that's a chilling thing, right? But it's my truth. That shit has happened to me. I don't know what it is that my life is going to turn out to be from day to day or from next year. I can set goals and have plans or have dreams and have hopes. But my ideal is to just dress up and show up every day and try to be the best person I can be and give back what I found here, you know, which is a little. I don't do enough. I just don't ever do enough. I'll never be able to do enough, right? That's what you hear it said in here. But when you're filled with gratitude and you're filled with thankfulness for the life that I've had to live, I mean, I've got to ride motorcycles all over through the Western United States, and I did that for 25 years. You know, I sold my bike 2 years ago, you know? I went through a whole bunch of surgeries, you know, and I had to be on medication, you know? And I remember Stevie, I remember I called him up, and I'd been on oxys for 17 days. And I called him up and I said, "Stevie, the shit's starting to take me away." And he goes, "How many days you got?" And I go, I call him the next day. "I got 1 day. I got 2 days." As prescribed, but I had to walk out of that. Now that's frightening, because it's that quick that that shit can take you, because our denial system, my denial system says, "I need that shit. It'll make me feel better." And you know what? There's a reason for having medication, but if you can't take the medication as prescribed, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not any of that kind of shit. All I know is that, you know, you got to keep yourself in check, and other people need to be accountable or help you be accountable for what you're going through. Because, you know, of ourselves and by myself, you know, I'll think two is better than one. You know what I mean? And that's just the way it goes for me. But, you know, I keep doing the deal every day. You know, my life today, my life today is really good, right? But my biggest problem is still between my ears. This, my perception, my lack of acceptance, my lack of being able to look at the world through other people's eyes and accept their reality. Do I look at people and say, "Well, that's untreated alcoholism," and I start doing this or I start doing that? Who's got untreated alcoholism? Me. Why do I have to become the judge, jury, and executioner of people that I love and care about? That's not my job. You know, we end up, you know, we don't shoot our wounded, right? We don't shoot our wounded because, you know, everybody in this room's got a story that, you know, we just make most people cry. You know what I mean? It's just devastating what we go through. The humiliation, the devastation, the bewilderment, the terror, all that kind of stuff. It happens to us, you know, but we get better. You know, we get better a day at a time. We walk ourselves out of this. We act ourselves out of this. You know, we don't get this by just sitting in a room or fucking just going and having coffee and not fucking doing the work. We got to do the work, people. You know, I would not be here if it wasn't for Al and Daryl coming to my house and saying, "Either you're going to grow or you're going to go." And I sat at his table and I wrote out the things that gave me the most guilt, shame, remorse that I could ever, I wouldn't tell anybody. And he's probably like the only person I've ever really ever told. Right? Because it was that deep to me. But it would have killed me. Right? And I'm not going to let that happen anymore. I got to share one thing. I held back something in my fifth step. And I had a sponsee. When I had 17 years sober, I went through this fourth and fifth with a friend of mine, a friend and the fellow, anyway, went through it, right? And then next night was a Tuesday night meeting, and we always met at the Tuesday night 8 o'clock meeting in Orchid, and he calls me up during the day and says, "Hey man, I left something out." And I said, "Okay, cool. We'll meet tonight before the meeting, but just meet me there and we'll talk about it." We talked about it and he shared something with me. I shared that one last thing. That one last, and I had 17 years. I don't say that out of being proud. I say that out of being that sick and that dominated by fear and that dominated by self, that no one, in ego and pride, that no one's going to see me for who I really am. Don't live the lie. See, it tells us here, man, the truth will set you free, man. You know, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. This is the key of recovery, right? And it is. You know, I had to become willing before I could be honest. I had to become willing before I cannot be honest. I had to become a little bit more open-minded before I became honest. Because I was still too worried about what you're going to think, right? Well, you know, today it's not so much I worry about what anybody thinks, because I got nothing really to hide anymore. right? You know, the steps keep me from having to act out on character defects, right? To me, character defects, if I'm acting out on my character defects, that's untreated alcoholism. That's selfishness and self-centeredness on my part. One more time. The underlying causes and conditions of why I get loaded and why I get used is fear, 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 fear. You know? So I don't want you to see me for who I am. I don't want you to know who I'm really all about. You know? I'll keep you right out there, just like when I was homeless. You know? Nah, I don't need that shit. You know? I'd rather kill myself almost before I let you know who I am. And that's the sad thing, is that people are dying to get in these rooms. They're dying to get in these rooms. You're sitting in this room tonight, and hopefully you're all sober, you know, and you got a shot at it. You got a shot at it, you know? You know, and it's like, just stay, you know? The hardest thing to do is to stay. You know, it's easy to get loaded. Everybody in this room knows how to get loaded. All of us. Drink is this far away. There it is, baby. Louis B's, yeah. Wherever the hell you hung out, you know. Wherever you hung out, right? You know, it ain't about fixing. It ain't about drugging. It ain't about drinking anymore. It's about fucking holding on to your ass, walking this life, trusting the loving God, you know, and being grateful for the things that you never even realized that you could have. You know, when I was out there, God, I remember when I was out there, I always wanted the life that I'm living today, right? I got a nice home now. I got a nice car. I am married to a wonderful woman, Lisa. She's beautiful. She's wonderful. You know, her parents, her mom, late stage, she's got Alzheimer's. She's nuts. Her dad's got stage 4 cancer. I got a daughter who's struggling with this disease right now. And these are the things that I deal with on a daily basis that most of you don't know about. Because that's not why I project myself. I project myself most of the time is that I'm grateful for the life, because all that drama and all that chaos going around me doesn't have to be my fucking disease coming alive. Right? My disease wakes up and it's not good for anyone around me. You know? It won't be. I just know that. I've caused too much destruction and hurt. I've got to make amends to the people that I did the most guiltful, shameful things and, you know, hurt my, obviously all the but some girlfriends I had to make resentment or amends to. And let me tell you, when I made those amends, I felt free again. I mean, it was like doing my fifth step where I came up when I first did my fifth step and I did it with Al. And I remember I walked up and I'm skipping. I'm 40 years old. I'm skipping in this front yard back and forth like a little kid. I had gotten free. And when I did those amends with Nan and Annie, I remember when I did those amends with them at different times, we had gotten together, we had lunch, we had you know, I felt free. You know, all the shit that kept me loaded, all the stuff that we think that we can't ever get through and walk through, God presents that to, has presented that to me in my lifetime, in my recovery, when the time has been appropriate, as long as I've had the willingness to make the amend. You know, because there's people that I've tried to make amends to want nothing to do with me. They don't want to hear from me. They don't want to accept a letter. They don't want nothing. And I just got to live with that because I've done my part, right? I've done my part. But come the 8th, 9th month when we talk about amends and all that stuff, that shit comes up, you know? It doesn't dominate me like it used to. I remember Stevie said, well, do you think you'd learn to live with it? And I said, yeah, and I believe the big book talks about it, that we can learn to live with it. You know, we, as long as we become willing and we are able to do these things, right? If you are willing to do it. That's probably one of the things that has allowed me to stay here, is that the willingness to trust God's plan in my life, this loving God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, that has walked me through the passing of my wife. Yeah, I got a couple minutes. You know, when I was going through losing Pam, you know, my house was covered with AA people 24/7. You know, people were coming over. I had coffee pot going, all that stuff. And I remember it was terrible. It was terrible. We ended up, I remember I was trying to entertain people as they were coming over. And I remember little Joy. Joy said to me, he says, Luke, let people love you. I was like, what? He said, let people love you. You don't even got to do this, man. Let's take care. We've got this. You know, and so they made the coffee. And the next thing you know, everybody's bringing food and everything, you know. And then people will come and go and, you know, say their goodbyes to Pam and stuff like that. And then my oldest daughter, Lauren, she comes at me and she says, how come you're killing my mom? And I got to pull the tube and I got to fucking, you know, do that stuff, because that was our arrangement and that's what we had talked about, right? And I'm taking this away from a young woman who's 20 years old, and I'm taking her mom away because I'm having to pull the plug, and she's coming at me and I'm crying on my living room floor in the fetal position, bawling my eyes out. And I walked through that pain with people like you. You guys held me up when I couldn't hold myself up. You guys carried me. You know, that's the indebtedness to Alcoholics Anonymous that I have. You know, there's so much more of my life that has gone on here, and I forgot a whole lot of it, I'm sure. I haven't forgot it, but it just hadn't queued tonight. I guess it went where it went, and that's all I asked God to do, was just, please let me help somebody and let me speak through me. That's what I ask him to do when I come and I speak. And so hopefully you guys got something out of that, and thank you for letting me share.
All right, let's see. Let's give Luke another round of applause. Thank you, Luke, for speaking tonight.